Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Barbara Morgan, and you're listening to Austin Film Festival's On Story. In this episode, we'll hear from screenwriter Ed Solomon. Solomon has had a major film released in each of the last five decades, starting in 1989 with his first feature, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, which he co-wrote with Chris Matheson. That film has spawned two sequels, both written by Solomon and Matheson, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey and 2020's Bill and Ted Face the Music. Solomon wrote Men in Black, Now You See Me, and HBO's interactive series, Mosaic. I spoke with Solomon about his writing and the process behind deciding which ideas to pursue at the Austin Film Festival. Clips of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, courtesy of Nelson Entertainment. Clips of Bill and Ted Face the Music, courtesy of Hammerstone Studios. So maybe I'll let you tell the story about how the idea for Bill and Ted came about and your experience with that. I'd love to hear what that kind of taught you about listening to your ideas.
It's funny because with Bill and Ted, Chris Matheson and me and three of our really good friends, and I think it was early 83, we put together an improv group and rented a little theater. And we didn't do it in front of an audience. We just did it to work out and make each other laugh. And we were, I don't know, 6 or 7 months into it. And we were just in a random night. You know, we never recorded anything. We weren't trying to create characters or anything like that. We were really just trying to push ourselves. And on one random night, we just did two guys who don't know anything about history, studying about history. I think I called him Bill or he called me Ted, or I don't remember which was which, but we just did these characters and enjoyed playing them. And it's funny when I look back, because we knew we wanted to be writers. We just enjoyed playing them. And so we would mess around at night. That night we went to a coffee shop and just did Bill, just as Bill and Ted. And we would do it back and forth over the course of the year. And I remember when I was on Laverne and Shirley and Chris was at grad school in San Diego, we wrote some letters back and forth as Bill and Ted. And then at one point we said, hey, what if we wrote a movie together? Hey, that would be fun. What should we write? And we started thinking, well, maybe we'll do like a sketch movie. And one of the sketches was going to be a Bill and Ted sketch. And then Chris's dad, who was this guy, Richard Matheson, who was a very famous science fiction writer, he said, why don't you expand that out into a whole story? That sounds like it could be its own story. And we said, oh, I wonder if it could. We started talking about what would make us laugh most about the characters. And for some reason, having them talk to the greatest people who ever lived seemed really funny to us. In particular, we thought, what if they're responsible for everything bad throughout history that has ever happened?
I'm Bill. This is Ted. We're from the future.
Socrates. Now what?
I don't know. Philosophize with him.
All we are is dust in the wind, dude.
My Laverne and Shirley money had run out. I had a real tough time getting a job after Laverne and Shirley because I got hired based on a play I wrote in college to be on Laverne and Shirley. And I was okay. I wasn't great. I was okay. Not good enough to get hired by the producer into another show. And I didn't get a TV job right away, which saved my life, actually. I thought it was the worst thing of my nightmare, which, oh, I'm a flash in the pan. I'm done. And so then after we wrote the Bill and Ted script, and we laughed like crazy writing it. We outlined it in like 3 days. And we talked about it over the course of a couple of months, like I think 3 times. But then we sat down and just powered through an outline, which turned out to be almost the whole thing. And then we wrote it in 4 days. And the script actually weirdly took off positively for us. And I can say, honestly, I wouldn't have written it had I not failed out of television. So in a weird way, had I succeeded, I probably wouldn't, Bill and Ted wouldn't have happened, and I'd probably be unemployed now.
Yeah. As opposed to having just made the third Bill and Ted. Let's talk a little bit about that psychological process of setting yourself up for writing and what state of mind you need to be in, your own personal expectations of what you should be doing. You know, how you approach those times with your writing. You may have a great idea, you may not, but how do you approach the daily process?
Philip Pullman, who wrote The Golden Compass and a bunch of other books, has my favorite quote, which I'm going to botch. I'm paraphrasing a great quote. I'm saying it badly. But it was something like, my job as a writer is to write well, even when I'm not quote, inspired. I personally think inspiration and the need to be inspired is one of many things that people believe they need that screws them up more than it helps them in a big way. Because the truth is, I have found, at least in my own experience, I think we call something inspiration when it's really maybe just a breakthrough. That's the process of a lot of mulling. Or occasionally there's a great idea, but an idea is not a story. An idea is just a window into a story. And in fact, I can't tell you how many times I've had what I think is a great idea or even an okay idea, but if you keep pursuing it and pursuing it, it's led to something much richer and deeper and more surprising. And that original great idea isn't even what the idea is anymore. When we feel we need to be inspired, it sets this expectation up for what we think a good idea is. Inspiration, it's got a symphony, you know, it's got lightning bolts. To me, the two big traps we fall into, especially as early writers, I need to be inspired and I need to feel passion about this, which again, I think screws you up more than it helps you, because it makes you think that you have to have this intense love for your idea at all times, which is utterly impossible to maintain. But also, it absolutely makes you unavailable for the true good ideas, which are very subtle and which you have to be really alert for, I think. And they come in the quieter ways. Like if you let your curiosity, like if you go, I wonder what would happen if this, and what kind of character would do that? And well, if that's what she's like, what would start her there? What would scare her? What would get her into that position? Who is she? Oh, and then what would her, and then if that's the case, then maybe, you know, and you just start to ask questions about something or someone and follow something that you're curious about, what gradually happens is you get something much deeper than passion. You actually get intimacy with something, you know, you develop a deeper attachment to it. And then of course your job becomes figuring out how to remain intimate with it while also being objective. And, you know, it's like that dance between being deeply inside something and then stepping way outside.
You've written a lot of original stuff. What gets you to keep maintaining the path to actually finishing it, to see if there's something truly there?
Well, there's always this big question, I think, about like, do I have the confidence to keep going? And confidence is another word that I think we hear a lot of about, and people, I think people feel they need to have. And I think that's another unrealistic expectation, because who has confidence? I don't have confidence. In fact, the more confidence I have, the more dangerous a position I feel I'm in. And the key for me is to try to keep myself, if I can, between conscious and unconscious competent, meaning, A, I don't have the skill to be in unconscious competent all the time anyway, but keeping yourself so that occasionally you get lost in the zone, but you also pull back so that you can either replicate something. Like when we wrote the Bill and Ted script, it wasn't my first screenplay. It was actually my third, but it was the first one that like landed right for people. And weirdly, amazingly, as a screenplay, it's got a simplicity to it and an elegance to the structure that we stumbled upon without knowing any rules. We got hired to do a series of jobs, Gremlins 2 for Spielberg. We got hired for all this stuff that we failed out of. Just like with the Laverne and Shirley thing, we weren't ready. Chris and I weren't ready creatively, you know, to do it, because we got kind of lucky with the structure of Bill and Ted and with it working, but we didn't have the skills to replicate that. And it took a decade or so for me to develop the skills to be able to go, okay, I need to get myself to a place where I can write from a simpler place, as opposed to now I'm just thinking and overthinking.
Do you ever get to a point where you've done all of that and then you just can't write it? Like it's not working.
There's a moment when I know something is writable and it's not an intellectual one, it's an emotional one. That can come soon. It could come quite late. And it's always a question, especially on the spec, how do I know it's worth it? The answer to me. Is it a world you're curious enough about to explore? And are you enjoying being in this world and being with these characters? Do you feel them deeply? And then are they surprising you? That's when I know my characters are rich, which is when I have a gut feeling about where they would be at any moment or what they would do in any moment based on what they want. But then they start to surprise me with things. Then I know that I've created something fertile enough for other things to spring up. And that's always exciting, because when I'm in that world with the characters and they're right at the edge with them, where I'm not controlling them, it's like I've given them life and we're interacting in a weird way. The movie I'm working on now is an amazing director who I've worked with before, which is Soderbergh, who I love. I love him as a person. I love him as a director, as a filmmaker, and as a collaborator in every way. I couldn't ask for a better partner, because when we started on Mosaic, he said, watch these movies and these movies and these movies. Not that the movie, and when we did this one, which is called No Sudden Move, was originally called Kill Switch. He's like, I want to do a kind of watch these movies. And our movie's nothing like those movies, but they were the inspirational jumping off point. They were like an emotional jumping off point and a stylistic jumping off point. So here's my, it's not watch movies. That's not my advice. Pick a handful, a dozen. If you can do a dozen, if you can do 30 movies, put them up on your computer and then get up your final draft or your writer duet, whatever the heck you write in, get into that app and transcribe the movie from beginning to end. I had to do it because I was doing an adaptation of a Swiss film, and there was no screenplay that existed in English. And I thought, rather than get a translation, I thought, you know what would be better? I'm just going to type it out. I'm just going to type it from the screen. And I learned so many things. Here's what I learned. One, you need about a quarter of the dialogue you think you need. When you actually transcribe a movie, you realize how little dialogue is actually in the movie. Two, you need way less scene description as you actually think you need. When I was just typing it out, I was like, she walks in and crosses to the kitchen, you know, as opposed to jauntily, she throws her hair back and tosses her purse on the bed. Well, you know, none of that is needed, just simple and spare. Another thing I learned was scenes are not what we think they are. Scenes don't have beginnings, middles, and ends. And as a first-time writer, you often write that way. You know, your scene has a beginning. When you realize is that these movies are sequenced out, where sometimes a scene is two lines and sometimes you're just seeing a part of something and then going to, and it's all about how things accrue as you go forward and forward, you know, and forward. It allows you to have written 25 screenplays before you really write a screenplay, and you internalize the form in a way that gives you that sense of going from beginning to end and beginning to end and beginning to end without having to do it with your own damn script. And I found that incredibly helpful.
Well, so how do you go through the process of letting one go, though? So say you don't see it, you finish it, say you finish it, or you have an idea that you take to a certain level and then you don't ever really get down to writing it. How do you let that go? This is a bigger emotional life lesson too, right? But
the key is not objective. It's subjective, but it's being able to get to a place where you know yourself well enough, where you're not lying to yourself and you're not making your decisions based on neuroses or needs for approval or needs to not see yourself as a failure or any kind of ego needs, but can actually understand yourself well enough to go, this actually isn't working. Not, I can't handle it anymore, or not, I just can't figure it out. I can't figure it out. But rather, I thought this was going to work, but it's not working. It's an internal standard of how do I get out of my own way so that I trust my thoughts here? That's the way to do it. And there's nothing to say that you won't figure it out later. I had a script, I've had several movies. The thing I'm writing right now, this romantic comedy, was an idea I had about 7 or 8 years ago and couldn't quite figure out, and then suddenly figured it out 6 months ago just by fluke. Suddenly went, oh, wait, oh, of course. Like a random thing hit me, and I went, oh, actually, if that lays right onto that idea, and oh, that opens that whole thing up. I lost interest in the idea. I put it aside, and then something new happened, and I went, oh, my God, there's that idea. And then suddenly I was interested in it again. And I've had other ones I had one that I always was interested in, but I didn't have the writing skills to write until 10 years later. So
sometimes it's the time and place, really.
If you're a writer, you're going to be a writer forever. And any one idea or scene or script or sequence, you know, is just part of a long flow. It doesn't mean don't take it seriously. I think you focus really hard on everything you're working and try to make it as best as you possibly can. But each one, each individual one in and of itself isn't that important in the long run. And if you have this is where the faith comes in again, to know that, hey, the script is, it's really just about making this the best I can make it so that it becomes the shoulders upon which I step to get to my next script. And then the next one after that, and then the next one after that.
So how much does your actual life intervene in your writing?
I mean, it's porous, right? I mean, you have to figure out how to get inside what you're writing. And invariably on everything I write, I'm going through it right now in my romantic comedy. I'm thinking, oh gosh, you know, where am I personally in this? You know, the movie I'm doing with Steven takes place in the mid-50s in Detroit, crime story, noir crime story. Don Cheadle is and Benicio del Toro are the two leads. And what do I have in common with those guys? And they're low-level crooks. Where am I? How do I access? And it's a combination of empathy for who these characters are. And then it's putting yourself in their shoes and then where am I in this story? And weirdly, I've written, I don't even know how many things, including episodes and episodes of seasons of shows and different stories and plays. And I haven't run out of being able to find myself in them. And they can be incredibly different. So your life always intrudes. In fact, the hard thing is to have it not, you know, the hard thing is to try to find separation so that you can not always be working or, you know, not always be not working, but find some way in the, you know, it's like we were talking about before. It's about applying your brain to the process. It's about finding the physical space, finding the emotional space to then go, all right, now I'm going to take my brain on a journey. I'm going to use my brain, and it's not even my brain, my entire body, you know.
What kind of challenges did you have going back to revisit Bill and Ted after you've, you know, not just time and you've grown as a writer? And
we didn't want to rehash the first two movies. And we also knew that, you know, these guys are going to be in their 50s now as opposed to being in their teens.
After you failed couples therapy, Liz and Joe were visited by other thems from the future who gave them a phone booth and sent them all through time and space looking for just one life where they could be happy with you.
And guess what?
They didn't find one. And now we've been alone for 2 years because you sent our wives away.
No way.
Yes way.
Our wives have been gone for 2 years and you didn't do anything about it?
Oh, you did all right. You went back and you made it worse.
And guess what else? Your daughters won't even talk to you.
What?
You're a Ted.
One thing I did not do, and I think I'm glad I didn't do it, was watch the first two movies before, because I think I would have tried to replicate them more rather than just, you know, what Chris and I did was just sort of feel where the characters were and go, let's just write from that. Where would they be now?
This is the story of our most excellent dads.
I'm Bill S. Preston, Esquire.
And I'm Ted Theodore Logan.
And we're Wild Stallions!
This was probably the first time you saw him.
Let's rock!
And this was probably the last.
Not long before we were born, they were told they were going to write a song that was going to unite the entire world.
Which they thought they had done with their hit single, Those Who Rock.
Not only did it not unite the world, but the band fell apart. And our dads, alone now, were trying harder and harder.
I mean, there were a lot of challenges that were unusual ones because it's not like it has a wide fan base. It's got a narrow fan base, but it's deep. And the fans of the movie are like, they feel like family to me in a way. And I, and a lot of them really were looking forward to having a third movie. And I just did not want to let any of them down. But the problem is that a lot of people had their own expectations of what the movie would be. So at the end of the day, what are you trying to do? Make a movie that me and my three main partners, which then became six main partners, meaning Chris Matheson and Alex and Keanu, which then, and then Scott Kluge and Dean Paris. So Scott, the original producer who came back, and Dean, the director, and then some of the other people that came on the movie. But making a movie that we're happy with. And then for me, the next level was, if we can be happy with it, I'll be fine. But if we can be happy with it and the fans can be happy with it, I'll think I did my job, regardless of how successful the movie is. There was a different onus on Bill and Ted because it went from like this weird lark that we wrote when we were basically post-adolescent. I'm 60 now, but you know, like I was 23. It became kind of like a life work as opposed to just this weird lark that represented the beginning of my life. So that was a challenge. I mean, the other challenge too is you have a lot of partners. You're working with all of them. I mean, they're all, I mean, Alex and Ken were wonderful partners, but it is a challenge.
On Story is brought to you in part by the Alice Kleberg Reynolds Foundation, a Texas family providing innovative funding since 1979. This project is supported in part by the Cultural Arts Division of the City of Austin Economic Development Department, the Texas Commission on the Arts, the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services, Texas Library and Archives Commission, and the National Endowment for the Arts, on the web at arts.gov. On Story is supported in part by Too Far Media, immersive story experiences by Rich Shapiro. This show is produced by myself, Barbara Morgan. Our associate producers are Jamal Knox and Colin Heyer. Our editors are Jamal Knox and Travis Neely. Music is by Brian Ramos. Production assistance comes from Sound Lab, Inc., Travis Kennedy Sound, and KUT 90.5 in Austin. Go to austinfilmfestival.com to find out more about Austin Film Festival and Conference each October. Until next time, I'm Barbara Morgan, and this has been Austin Film Festival's On Story.